And we've got a little time left, so we are talking today to Bill Hutchison from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome back, Bill.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
Good, good. Now, let's talk about the fire situation in New Mexico. We talked to the Espanola Valley Humane Society right during the worst of the fire, the multiple wildfires that were going on, but particularly in Los Alamos, the Las Conchas fire. How has the Santa Fe Animal Shelter been preparing for fire? I understand that you've been doing this for years, since that huge, what was it, Cerro Grande
in 2000. Cerro Grande hit pretty unexpectedly, and the shelter, back when it was in the much smaller facility on Cerrillos Road, was just nailed with a massive influx of animals. And I think in that moment, we realized that we were not prepared. At the time, I was not working at the shelter, but was covering it for a newspaper, and I was shocked to see a couple of things. Number one, the chaos that was happening, and number two, how well people were handling the chaos of these animals. And at that point, the campaign to build a new shelter, it was a 10-year campaign to raise the money to build a new shelter, really began to understand that if this new shelter was going to exist, it was going to have to exist as a center point for a disaster just like this. So when they were drawing up the plans, when those wiser minds than mine were putting everything together to make this happen, the realization that an evacuation center for animals would be needed, because in Santa Fe, it's not a matter of if we're going to get a fire at some point, it's just a matter of when.
And so what were the plans like? What did you actually do to make the shelter animal disaster friendly?
There's a couple of pieces of it. The first is to have two buildings. We as those who visited know, we have a receiving building and an adoption building. And what we are able to do, or one of the things I suppose that we learned in 2000, was that it's not the best idea to foster out owned animals from evacuees into private homes throughout the city, because you've got them scattered everywhere. You've got a whole bunch of animals with a whole bunch of different needs, and keeping track of them in the midst of chaos is very, very difficult. What we did was to take all of our adoption animals that were already at the shelter and put them into foster care, either with foster parents that the shelter has or with any of the bunch of veterinarians in this town just stepped up, who had kennels, and took many, many animals from us. And Animal Humane New Mexico in Albuquerque took a number, just a whole bunch of folks really stepped up. What that let us do then was move the stray animals over into the adoption building and keep all the evacuation animals together in one building, where all of our kennel staff, all of our medical staff, and all of our volunteers could bring their various talents to bear for this population that was safe, together, and protected. And that was really a key to keeping everything flowing very smoothly. The other thing we did was, since we moved into that building about 6 years ago exactly, we're coming up to our anniversary, July 2005, we've been doing various practice drills to be ready for a disaster. When this happens, what will we do? And we're very grateful to Evelyn Ward of VOAD for really helping us make that happen. So we've kept what we call the shelter in a box stowed away for a long time. And the shelter in a box is a big giant box with everything you need to take in a whole bunch of animals out of nowhere all of a sudden.
And comprises everything you need?
This is tags, little collars around them, so you can assign a number and an identity to the animal. It's intake forms, it's collars and leashes, it's every bit and piece to make sure that when you have an animal in, you know who it is, and when it comes time for it to go home, you know who it belongs to, and keeping them safe and protected and healthy in between.
So when the Las Conchas fire broke out a few weeks ago, and it was very sudden and very, very rapid compared to the Cerro Grande fire even.
It was. I remember going to bed and it was whatever it was, 6,000 acres, and waking up the next morning and it was 45,000 acres.
Right.
And having this conversation with our director about, is this real or is this a misprint? Did somebody get a typo wrong somewhere?
Right.
Because how is this possible, right? Well, it was possible.
Well, and it so happened that very night you're talking about, I was driving home from Albuquerque, and the whole time, the entire horizon was on fire. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Looks like a city, right? All of a sudden, it's lighted up. It's like you've got a city the size of Los Angeles on
the
other side of the mountain.
It was like driving up to Los Angeles, only it was red and yellow, and it was burning trees.
That LA was our LA, and rather than lit, it was on fire.
So this fire broke out. It was huge. It was very fast. What happened at the animal shelter?
We immediately, before, this was prior to the evacuation, even prior to the voluntary evacuation, which was close on the heels of the growth of the fire, but we called a meeting together very early the next morning of our department heads and said, all right, we know what's going to come down the pike. What are we, everybody get ready. And battle stations had already been divvied up, as it were, and so we were ready to go, and we started making those phone calls to get the animals out almost immediately, knowing that they were going to come in. And once the voluntary evacuation started, they began to trickle in and then come in a little heavier. And it was intense, but it was nothing compared to when the mandatory evacuation happened. And that's what we were all sort of waiting for. We knew that once the voluntary started, and that this was 0% contained, and 0% contained, and 0% contained, and then 45, and then 60, and then 80, and then 90,000 acres burned, this was going to happen. And when they started coming in, it was really amazing. We took our volunteers we had a number of experienced veteran volunteers, a couple of whom had actually been with the shelter back in the Cerro Grande fire, along with all of our staff. It was really all hands on deck the first night. We were there till midnight, and then we stayed open till 9 for, I don't know, a week or so after. It was astonishing to see this group of people come together to take in animals very smoothly, to move them very gently back to a kennel, because we're not talking stray animals who are already a little wonky in the head, maybe sort of unsocialized, they haven't had a lot of human contact. These were well-loved domestic animals, all of whom were a little bit pudgy and used to the couch, ready to go back home, but instead they were coming into a kennel. So,
and having presumably all kinds of separation anxiety.
So having this very smooth intake process combined with volunteers who were spending tons and tons and tons of time with these animals was key. We had all of our experienced dog walkers called in, and they were taking these dogs out from, they would get there often before the bulk of the staff, and they would stay all day long to get them out, because there's that powerful empathic realization that if this was my animal and he was coming to the shelter, as lovely as our shelter is, it's very different than the comforts of home. It's very different than the comfortable couch, the cozy bed that you bought, the bone that you love to chew on every night. It's a very different environment.
And above all, the relationships that you have with your owners.
Precisely. So between the volunteers getting them out regularly for walks, for exercise, for sunlight, just to de-stress them, we had a lot of owners also coming in to spend time with their animals. And that was a huge help. A lot of them couldn't through no fault of their own. They were either evacuated somewhere far away, or they still had their regular jobs in Santa Fe or elsewhere to go to. But a lot of contact between owners and pets just to help stabilize them. And you know, a side note, one of the funniest things that I saw were the matchings of animals that people have. What you don't get to see in normal shelter life is what the sort of animal demographics of a home really are.
What, did you see that whole dogs who look like their owners thing going on?
There was definitely some of that. In fact, there were even some guinea pigs who looked like their owners. But it was great to see these sort of mismatch. We had this we had a duo that was this enormous gentle German Shepherd and a corgi that looked like a miniature version of the German Shepherd together. We had a trio of very old dogs, one of whom was this enormous blue pit bull, beautiful, totally sweet, who came in with two old Chihuahuas, one, say, medium-sized and one really tiny. And the tiny one was the nastiest, most domineering, very sweet with the people, but so nasty and domineering to the other two dogs. At one point, I was visiting with them, and the pit bull was pushing her head into my chest, you know, just kind of nuzzling up and being very sweet. And the Chihuahua crawled into my lap, and at one point, the pit bull poked her butt with her nose. And that little tiny 6-pound toothless Chihuahua turned around and barked at her in a way that said, not only should you not have done that, you will never ever do that again, and I will shame you into the corner. And that pit bull, who must have been 10 times her size, if not more,
and could have swallowed her whole,
backed off and said, yes, ma'am, I'm sorry, ma'am, no, it will never happen again, I'm very sorry, my fault. So by the end of the influx, I think we had 166 animals, guinea pigs, several cockatiels, which I learned the hard way will bite you if you try to touch them, and even one turtle who was named Zeus, who really was one of my favorites. When Zeus's mom came back to pick him up, she came in with a, which was I thought was just brilliant, with a very big stock pot to take him home in. Like, you know, we have our kennels for our dogs and our cats. What a perfect way to transport a turtle. Nice, tall side so he can't climb out when you're driving. Right. Put a little water in there to keep him moist. It was really very sweet.
How long did these animals stay at the shelter before they were returned to their owners?
The last two dogs went home on Monday, what was that, the 10th?
11th,
and
yeah.
The 11th. And those were the last two. Some of them went home even during the mandatory evacuation. Folks had found their initial place to stay and then somehow parlayed that into pet-friendly housing and came back and got them. The bulk of them went home within 48 hours of when the evacuation was lifted and Los Alamosans could repopulate the city. But other, you know, some folks were out of town. The only place they could find to go was, you know, southern part of the state or Colorado or what have you. So it took a while for some of them, but most of them went home very, very quickly. And that was really the second part of our preparation. Not just how are we going to deal with it when they all come in, but how are we going to handle it when they're all ready to go back out? And it was very, very smoothly. We put together a little questionnaire because we really wanted to know honestly how we did from these owners. And I was really pleased to see consistently across the board that the process of getting them in and getting them back out was smooth. And that, you know, I say that in a way that I fear may lack the requisite humility, but it's really because this astonishing group of animal lovers, staff, board members, volunteers, really came together and worked in harmony with each other. It was very, in many ways, it was kind of a non-event, not because it wasn't dramatic or scary or frightening, but because everybody just kept their cool. Everybody kept their cool and worked together. And it was a beautiful thing to see. It was like watching a well-oiled machine.
And that is the direct result of planning, thinking ahead, and being prepared.
And loving animals and the people who care for them enough to throw your heart all the way into it. I think it was a combination of brain and heart.
So we've got just about a minute or less left. What else would you like people to know about the animal shelter? Any good dogs there home?
We have a ton of good dogs right now. And for July, we're doing what we call our big dog event. And this is the clever double entendre of big dog event, which means all of our big dogs, not the little dogs, the big dogs for July are available for the low, low, low adoption fee of only $20. And I think this is a great opportunity for people to realize how awesome big dogs really are. I think we get a little nervous about them. That seems like, just that 70 pounds of caring for something is not as easy as 20 pounds of caring for something. But man, big dogs are awesome. I've been a big dog guy for most of my life. When I got my pug, I realized that what I love about little dogs is that essentially they're big dogs in a much more portable package.
And if they pull on the leash, they don't pull you over.
Exactly. But there's lots of really, really great big dogs at the shelter, and they go overlooked simply because of their size. So this event hopes to promote them and get them out into the world.
Bill Hutchison is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, as always, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.